Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode number 28. This week, we'll be talking Double-A baseball with Tom Gauthier, the play-by-play announcer of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook. Written by Jay Blue, Charlie Caskey, and Jared McDonald, the handbook is available as an ebook now at smashwords.com for only $7.99 US. You'll get all of what you need to know to follow the Blue Jays minor league system and the players. We've got team profiles with ticket information, media information, as well as team histories and driving directions. We've also got player profiles of over 250 players in the Blue Jays system. It's jam-packed with Blue Jays minor league goodness. Coming up in just a few seconds is my interview with New Hampshire Fisher Cats play-by-play announcer, Tom Gauthier. Tom and I spoke over the weekend, but since our conversation on Saturday, the Fisher Cats have won 5 straight ballgames and are looking like a team possessed. And we're joined today on the Blue Jays From Away podcast by the play-by-play announcer of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, the Blue Jays AA affiliate. We're joined by Tom Gauthier. Welcome to the podcast, Tom.
Hey, thank you very much, Mike. It's great to be on here, and it's a beautiful day in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Well, I'm sure it is. I've heard great things about that ballpark there.
Yeah, it's really probably the truly most legitimate actual quote-unquote stadium. It probably has the best big-time feel. It's a much taller stadium than any other place that we play. Akron is probably the only thing that's comparable to it, and even this is bigger than Akron. 10,000 seats, 10,000 plus seats. They have a lot of different things built around the ballpark in terms of the roller coaster in right field, some different amenities inside the ballpark, and then it's a double decker. It's the I think it's one of two double deckers in the actual Eastern League, so it's a nice feel. And sitting here in the press box, it feels like a major league booth because we're about a mile from home plate.
Well, hopefully you can still see the game well enough to call it for all the fans at home, wherever they may be.
Yeah, that's not a problem at all. It's actually a nice view. The only thing, it's just a little bit different because fly balls always look a little bit bigger here than they actually are. We thought we had a couple of balls last night that were going to be warning track or maybe even over the wall, and I think one of them made it to the track all night. So it's a little harder to gauge those, but the rest of it's fine.
Well, and last night's game was a pretty interesting one. You had a 12-inning, 1-0 victory for the Fisher Cats. So there wasn't a lot of offense either way.
Yeah, it was a tougher night last night. This is a team, though, this Altoona team, they pitch really well. And our team is, probably starting to come into its own. It's been a very long month of May. Our team ERA is still over 4.5 in the month. It's been a little bit better lately. And again, I don't know how much of a offensive juggernaut this Altoona team is, but that would not give our guys enough credit last night. Really pitched well, had 16 strikeouts, which is our season high. So it was a nice game last night. It was one of those where one run was going to make the difference at some point, and both teams had a couple of opportunities late, but bullpens were a little bit better than situational hitting, and eventually we went to 12 and were able to get a win by the end of it.
Well, and it almost seems like this team has lost a lot of close games, and I think, it must be one of the tougher parts of the jobs when you've got a team that just hasn't been performing, but it seems like there have been a lot of close games that the Fisher Cats just haven't managed to overcome little things here and there and just seem to be on the wrong end of it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I mean, we've had, over the course of the season, we've played 13 games decided by 4 runs or more, where basically, it's going to take at least one guy to get on base, and then everybody else in the that's due up in that inning to get on base. You need to bring at least 4 guys to the plate. We've only had 13 of those games out of 55 all season long, and I would prefer, as a broadcaster, I much prefer it this way, where you're in every single game. We've played 23 one-run games, and we've played 10 two-run games. The problem is we're only 11-22 in those contests, so the record's not great, but it's much better than getting blown out every night. We saw an 18-0 loss last Saturday night at home a week ago today, and it was one of the ugliest games that I've ever seen at any level of baseball since I've been doing this now for seven seasons. So I'd much prefer losing 4-3 every night, even if you do have a lot of games where you give up the lead in the 7th, 8th, or 9th innings, than seeing your team down 6-0 with nobody out in the first inning, and eventually, you know, you're losing by 10, 12, 15 runs.
Right. And, you know, it looks to me like the pitching, you know, the pitching has been okay. But looking here, the Fisher Cats are scoring the second least runs per game in the Eastern League. It's a very new staff this year, from the manager, all the way down to, the new pitching coach and a new batting coach. What are you seeing that's a little bit different this year about approaches of some of these coaches?
You know, I don't know that it's so much the coaches. I think John Nunnally is a very hands-on guy as our hitting coach. And I know 2 years ago when we were here in 2012, Nunnally was with us that season, and we had guys like Brad Glenn and we had guys like Ryan Goins that really enjoyed working with Nunnally, and they spent a lot of time with Nuns on the field before games, on the field way before games, doing early work before the early work that day, whatever the fundamental was that the team was going to work on. He was out there a lot with those guys. Bobby Meacham has been great working with infielders as a former shortstop himself. And in particular, he's really spent a lot of time with Kevin Nolan. I know that he thinks very highly of Kevin Nolan, really thinks that Kevin Nolan has some very serious ability. And as he grows and starts to become more of a leader on the field so that he can just say, all right, first and third, this is what we're going to do. He can sort of be the quarterback of the team defensively in the field and control all nine positions. I think that's what Bobby's working on Kevin with right now. And then, you know, Jim Psychowski, he's seen a lot of these guys. He's seen them when they were really young, when they were in Vancouver. So that's the beauty of having coaches that have been in the system for a couple of years, albeit, you know, only Bobby's second year, John Nunnally's third, and Jim's been here for 4 years now. But they've seen a lot of the guys that we've had on this team, so they know what these guys like to do. They know what makes them tick. One story in particular just recently, Jim Psychowski worked with Dustin Antlin, had one little thing. Antlin was falling off in the first base side of the mound through his first handful of games, and he was giving up an ERA of 12 or 13. Last four or five outings now, he's been nearly untouchable, and it was one little adjustment and probably a little confidence for Antlin with one good outing, and all of a sudden, bam, Dustin Antlin, who has good stuff, is able to throw the strikes and get outs here. So it's a staff that has you know, some background with these players, and I think that it's probably more of a hands-on staff than I've seen in the last couple of years.
I think there are a lot of guys in the pitching staff who are sort of veterans and have been around a while, but there are a couple of younger players who are certainly making it their first attempt at Double A, and one of those, of course, is Aaron Sanchez, and I'm sure you're asked about Aaron quite often. And one of our Twitter followers was asking about his last outing, in which he gave up a number of runs, but he seemed to be in much more control than he was the previous outing. And the question that was asked was, you know, was he throwing a lot of fastballs or mostly fastballs in that outing?
You know, I think that any start that Aaron Sanchez has, he's going to throw primarily the fastball because it's his best pitch. I mean, the curveball is a good pitch as well, but, you know, until he's a master at throwing the fastball for strikes, I don't think that you necessarily worry about throwing the curveball as much. It's more of an out pitch for him than a get-me-over strike. When you throw 95 to 97 and you have sink, you can throw a lot of fastballs. Just like a guy like Scott Copeland, just like Marcus Walden last year, you can live and die in the fastball. But I also think that probably a bit of a work in progress for him that last start too, because we know the story from his start a week ago Saturday, a week ago today. That was the game where we were down 6-0 after the first six batters. So, he comes out, he walks the first guy on Wednesday or Thursday, then gives up a base hit. And I think everybody's starting to think, here we go again. What are we going to see? And all of a sudden he turns it on, gets a double play and a ground out. And I think there was a collective sigh and really turned into have a very good outing considering what he did the last time. Now, fastball was probably over the plate a lot. He was probably more just getting it down because that's really been the problem, is that he's been up with the fastball, but it's been up in wild, so he's been giving up walks. The other day he was up a little bit, giving up hits, gave up some hard grounders for hits, which happens sometimes to sinker ball pitchers, and then had one inning where it was really some bad luck, an error that was ruled a hit, and then a bouncing ball that deflected off his glove and went to second base. He looked night and day like a different pitcher than what we saw in New Hampshire a week ago today, compared to what we saw on Thursday. And again, 6 runs, 9 hits, both season highs by a good margin. but it was a much more, he felt much better coming out of that game because he went to the seventh inning and really had some bad luck, but really looked good for the first three innings.
Well, that's really encouraging to hear because, again, I know that it's not always you don't always see a linear improvement from pitchers or for any player as they move up through a system in general. And I think we've also seen that from someone like Matt Boyd, who was absolutely dominant down in the Florida State League, but comes up to, he comes up to New Hampshire and really struggled a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, he really had a hard time of it. And again, it's a guy that, you know, this is the biggest adjustment is learning how to pitch at this level. I mean, single A to double A. You get to double A and you have success. You can pitch in the major leagues. It's just a matter of being probably mentally strong enough. And all the guys here probably have the ability to play in the major leagues, but it's a lot of it is the mental side of the game. And a lot of it's knowing how to hit in situations and knowing how to be a baseball player as opposed to just being a talented guy. And Boyd clearly has talent, doesn't throw 95. But you can get away with some of that down in the Florida State League, which has big ballparks, which certainly helps out a little bit. You have younger hitters down there, which helps out a little bit. You come up here and you face a team that has guys that have had 3 or 4 years of double A experience. They've had, let's say it's 2,000 career minor league at bats. You get some guys that have experience here and it can be a tough road to hoe. And eventually, you know, even a guy like Aaron Sanchez, his numbers were probably a little bit off, misleading at the beginning of the season because there was one start in particular I remember. He went 5 innings against Redding, but Redding couldn't lay off a high fastball, and that doesn't play at the major leagues. If he faced a team like the Yankees and he's throwing chest high all the time, those guys are going to eat him alive. He'll last 2 innings, or he'll last an inning, if that, and he'll give up 7 walks, and he'll be out of the game. So it really is learning about how to pitch, how to hit your spots here, keeping the ball down. And you know, it's funny because I always see guys like Austin Bibbins-Dirks that throw 95 when they're younger and eventually get released by an organization. Now they hang around because they've learned how to pitch. They've learned how to, you know, to work in accounts. They've learned how to pitch backwards. They can pitch to contact now. They know if they need to ratchet it up to 95 or 96. Maybe they can't anymore, but at least they have the option there. And you know, so it's fun for guys like that to watch because those are the guys that stick around and those are the guys that eventually have that chance to kick around long enough and get a call up to the major leagues as opposed to some young hotshot that has a $1 million arm but has no idea what he's doing in the mounds.
Well, speaking of exactly that type of situation, there's a guy who started the season with the Fisher Cats who just today made his second start in AAA with the Buffalo Bisons and had a fantastic game. Fortunately, he got off the hook. He was on the hook for the loss after pitching 7 strong innings, giving up just 3 hits and 2 runs. And that's Deck McGuire. He was really, you know, watching that game on MILB.TV. I saw some really good stuff out of Deck. And you can, I think, tell us just as much as anybody what you've seen from Deck both, you know, last year, this year, even going into the year before, and how he's matured, because I don't think he's really gained anything in terms of his stuff, but I think he's matured as a pitcher.
Yeah, and he has a lot more confidence, I think, now that he did in 2012, and it's more directed confidence now. I'm sure he had a lot of misguided confidence, misplaced confidence. He was a first-round pick. He was getting a shot at AA, and, hey, I'm going to go here for a month and a half, and, you know, the Blue Jays invested $2 million in me, and eventually I'll be in the major leagues by the end of 2012. And if you talk to him, he'll tell you that 2012 was a huge learning experience for him. And then even last year, he was a lot different guy until the final month of the season when all of a sudden it was a game down in Richmond. He was taken out of the rotation. I can't remember who started in the game now, but he came in relief. And then in his hometown, it was almost like he was a little bit embarrassed. Everything just kind of clicked for him. He went 4 great innings, wanted to come back for a fifth, was upset that he didn't get the fifth inning. After he relieved, it was either Drabeck or Drew Hutchison that day. Can't remember which one now, but he didn't get the fifth, so he didn't get a chance to get the save. He didn't get the win that day, but then he just turned it on. He was a much better pitcher the rest of the month. The hits have been down, and I think for Deck, a lot of it is taking it one pitch at a time. Marcus Walden was a big proponent of that when he was in this system, and we talked to him, and he said that, you know, that's a big thing for Deck is that he'll overanalyze thing, and Deck has admitted this to us as well. In fact, during our last interview with him before he got called up, he said, I overanalyze things. He goes, now I've stopped doing that. If I throw a curveball and it gets hit, oh, well, I'll come back and throw a curveball, make it better the next time. And he's been able to really adjust on that, and I think over time he has more innings. You go back to 2012, he only had, 150 innings in his minor league professional career. He didn't play in 2010 after getting drafted. Only came up at the end of 2011 to AA. So he was only 22 years old when he was here the first time. And you know what? There are a lot of 22-year-olds that have a hard time in AA. So as he's gotten older, he's learned how to pitch better, learned how to really know how to pitch in terms of what pitches to throw here and there, but he's also sharpened up his stuff. And then again, I think the confidence and really being able to slow the game down has been huge for Deck, and it's been great to see him get rewarded with a chance to AAA and now have two good starts in his first two outings.
Well, that's great to hear, and we do wish him all the best in his new team of the Buffalo Bisons. But I want to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the hitting, because there are definitely a few concerning things that I've noticed looking things over. Haven't quite been down there this season yet, but I'm looking forward to that at the end of the month. But what's really sort of striking is when I look over the players on the team this year, especially the hitters, that almost everybody who was on the Fisher Cats last year, with the exception of maybe Ryan Schimpf, is really struggling this year. And that included Brad Glenn before he was promoted and just has gone bonkers up in Buffalo. But, you know, AJ Jimenez is, you know, his average was 223 and Brian Van Kirk was 217 and Andy Burns is hitting 207 and Kenny Wilson, 196, and Kevin Nolan is hitting 180, and Gabe Jacobo, and all these guys had great seasons last year. I mean, Nolan was an all-star last year. Burns was very, very, very solid after his first couple of weeks up in AA. So is there anything you can point to other than maybe just a collective funk that they're all in that's going on there?
You know, I really wish I could, and I have to go back and talk to John Nunnally about it, because we talked at the end of April, Nuns and I did, and it was, you know, one of those where guys, you know, they didn't forget how to hit in the off season, and now we've been another month here, and guys like Burns, guys like Nolan, they're not really snapping out of it. And it's one thing if you have guys that are hitting balls hard, and they're finding gloves, they're just foul here and there, and, you know, maybe get some tough breaks like that, but they really haven't even had that. I mean, Kevin Nolan has not had a lot of hard hit balls this season. Gabe Jacobo was brutal right up until about May 10th, and then things started to click for him, and now his wife just gave birth, and he's out in California enjoying first couple of days of fatherhood, but he had started to turn it around. In fact, had 12 RBIs in the 10 games before he actually went back out to California to be with his wife for the birth of their son. So, you know, he had started to turn it around. These guys, they're all too good of hitters to be in this funk like this, and I don't know what it is. I know that John Nunnally would no doubt be working with the guys on the mechanics. To my eyes, they don't look different than what they did last year, so I don't know if it's a product of a losing team that is starting to maybe wear on them a little bit, and or maybe they're the opposite. They're trying to do too much, and they're just not able to, but it's been interesting, and it's been, you know, a little disappointing to see, because, you know, Andy Burns came in, one of the top prospects in the system, had a great year last year with, what was it, 50 extra base hits. He stole 30 bags. He drove in about 80 runs on the year. Kevin Nolan, usually guys get better in their second double-A year, and he had a good season for us last year with 25 or 26 doubles by the end of the year and 9 home runs, so you could naturally expect to see, you know, those numbers increase, but unfortunately they just haven't, and it's been a little disappointing, and I'm sure it's frustrating for those guys, and it kind of fits into that whole realm of, you know, I don't know how we've lost 35 games yet, or 35 games already. I don't know how we lost 11 in a row, because this team, we all thought was going to be better than that. We thought these guys were better hitters, and for whatever reason, it's just not clicked yet.
All right, well, let's move on to something, you know, a little happier to talk about. In his first year in AA is Mike Krause, who's a good Canadian boy, as they say. And what have you seen from him, and what do you see from him out in the outfield as well as at the plate?
You know, he's a pretty good defender. He's such a big athletic guy. Kenny Wilson had compared him with one of your cohorts up there in Canada. Alexis Brodnicki had mentioned, you know, he reminds me of a Giancarlo Stanton down in Miami. Now, certainly the comparison probably a little misguided right now, because, you know, Stanton had a 39 home run season, and Krause may not have that quite that ability, but I think Kenny's point was that he's a guy that doesn't know how good he can be. And I think for Michael Krause, we've seen some very good things from him this year. He's a great defender, has a good arm. He runs like a gazelle. For a guy that's the size of an NFL tight end, he runs as well as anybody on this team. You know, and I think, you know, he's had some of those difficulties that you have where you get to double A, and I think he's gotten out of his swing at times. When he's been on, he's been really good. He's been hitting line drives, and I don't know if he's going to have that 40 home run potential at any point, but he can certainly hit a lot of doubles. He was leading the league in triples for the first month and a half of the season until he hurt his wrist a couple of weeks ago. So he's a guy that, you know, I think he hasn't even really hit what he can actually fully do here in AA, and he's still, you can tell with the ability that he has, he's still more than contributing to this team. And now that he's back healthy again, and gets a chance to get, you know, another 10-12 games in a row under his belt, I'm looking forward to seeing what he has, because he does have those athletic skills that, you know, that you look at and you say, wow, this guy's This guy's got a lot of talent if he can just eventually become a full-time baseball player. And I think he's getting there. I think that wrist injury sort of waylaid him a little bit.
Now, I know a lot of people down in Australia are fans of Mike Krause because he was down there this past season along with Jack Murphy John Birdie, who were playing for the Canberra Cavalry in the Australian Baseball League. And so how's his teammate from down there, John Birdie? What's he been up to?
He's been a fun guy to watch. I like watching players like that, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe it was growing up in New England, seeing a guy like Trot Nixon, who was that dirt dog mentality, and then watching Dustin Pedroia take over in the mid-2000s. Just a smaller, scrappy guy. And Jorge Flores probably fits into that mold as well. But I've always had a soft spot for guys that play like that. And there was one when I was in Bowling Green with my last team, a guy by the name of Tyler Bortnick, that the individual skills aren't that great, but the sum of all the parts are greater than any one individual thing. And John Birdie's that type of guy. He's leading our team in hitting. He plays every day. He plays hard every day. And he is fast. He's probably our fastest guy on this team. He's also fast and quick, which, you know, you can be fast, but take a while to get to that top end speed. There was a ball on the infield the other day, hit to second base, infield playing in, hard hit ball by Schimpf, and he scored without a throw from third base. He's got that much of a baseball instinct and a baseball mentality that he took right off from third. And plays like that are fun to watch. He has 20 or 19 stolen bases on the year, which is top five in the Eastern League. So he's been a fun guy to watch, and I think he's getting better. They're working with him on his defense at second base. He's played a little left field as well, but he's been Mr. Consistent. He's pretty much the only guy that we've had, whether through injuries or promotions or slumps, that has played every day, and probably the only guy that's really deserved to play every day, other than Ryan Schimpf, who would have had he been here without that call up to AAA.
Well, that sounds great as well. I don't want a short shrift. I don't want to give Ryan Schimpf the short shrift. I don't think I could say that, you know, five times fast. But, he's been outstanding this year. I mean, he's leading the team in home runs again after leading the team last year. His batting average is up to a much higher level than it was last year at .266 right now. And he's posting an OPS over 1,000. Is he doing anything different, or is it just, you know, he's making a little bit better contact and still driving the ball hard?
I think it's a little bit different. John Nunnally said his approach was a lot better this year. He got to the end of last season. I'm not sure if he was tired or what it was, but he didn't look very good at all. Only had 3 home runs, I think, in the final 6 weeks of the season, as it was down the end. He started out with 12 in the first 2 months and then only had 11 over the final 3-plus months. With a lot of playing time, playing just about every day. But he's a guy that gets on base. He draws a lot of walks. I don't think he's chasing as much this year, which I think helps. And from what Nunnally said, just a lot better looking for particular pitches, knowing what he can handle, and laying off some of the stuff that they got him away with. Lefties used to bury him with a slider down and away. There was no chance he'd have a hit against him. And now he still struggles against lefties. He's only at about 200 on the season, but he actually has half of his home runs against southpaws this year. So the approach is what John Nunnally has said, that has been a lot different. I don't know if I have the trained eye to compare it to last year, but Nunz has been impressed with his approach and said that he looks a lot better than he did last year. And obviously the results have showcased that. He leads the league in slugging. And if you're over 1,000 in your OPS, that's a Hall of Fame type number.
Absolutely. Now, before I let you go, because I know you've got a game to call pretty soon, I do want to ask you about the newcomers to the team, because the Blue Jays went out and got a few minor leaguers maybe to bolster the chances or bolster the win totals for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Tonight's starter is PJ Walters, and you've also got Hector Jimenez and as a catcher, and Melky Mesa playing the outfield.
Yeah, it's a chance to, I think the Blue Jays were just trying to right the ship here. I mean, it was really, 17 and 34, I think, when these guys started to filter in. And I think it's two things. Number one, it gets some older guys here. We were, you know, fairly young team for a good portion of this. Not a lot of guys with double A. We've had a lot of roster shuffling. So AJ Jimenez goes up. Somebody else comes in. Jack Murphy's been up and down twice. Ryan Schimpf goes up. Brad Glenn goes up. Heck, McGuire goes up. So it was a team that, its weakest point was the bullpen, and that was the one thing that was stable all year. So that hasn't changed right now. They haven't really done a lot to necessarily fix that. Guys are getting better in their roles. Tony Davis was sent down, and it was too bad. Tony was a great guy. So, that's been one thing that's sort of stabilized, but just trying to shake it up, I think, a little bit. It was one of those things where this team was really headed towards a historically bad season. We had 18 wins or have 19 wins now in the first 2 months of the season, a chance for number 20 today. You average that out over a full year, and you're looking at a 45 to 50 win season, which is really abysmal. That's almost a 100 loss season in the minor leagues, which is just about unheard of. So the one thing I think that these guys have brought in is a new step, because only Mesa was really an everyday player when he was in Omaha. And then you had Hector Jimenez, only had played 16 games, only had 50 at-bats in the first 2 months of the season. We get Jorge Flores called up from Florida down in Dunedin. He's a spark plug, and that guy's all over the place. A fun player to watch. Again, one of those smaller guys that really a gritty type of player, but has had some big hits for us. And so I think that those guys getting a new opportunity and getting to play every day. Jimenez and Mesa have been in the lineup every game since they came back. And we'll see what P.J. Walters has today, coming for to a much friendlier pitching league than the Pacific Coast League, in a league where he's never pitched before. You know, and coming back to an organization that he actually once knew. In 2011, he was with the Blue Jays. So we'll see what he has tonight. But those other guys, I think they've just enjoyed coming to a new situation, getting a fresh start, and getting a chance to play every day. Jimenez is going to play again today as the DH, and Mesa once again playing in center field. And he's a kind of a fun guy to watch, too. He's almost a little out of control, teetering on that edge of being out of control and being a really aggressive guy. Which, you know, when you have guys like that, it's why people watch NASCAR, because at any moment you could have a big crash. And, you know, I think it's the same thing with Mesa. At any moment he could do something really silly, but he's a really big player, takes a lot of big swings and runs all over the outfield.
Well, that sounds great. And, you know, it's always exciting when there's some new blood. And I have a feeling that, next month there will probably be some more new blood coming up, from, Dunedin. And once they're done their first half, that's just my two cents on the matter. I have a feeling that if they continue playing the way they are, some players down there like Daniel Norris and Dalton Pompey, probably the Blue Jays may be very hard pressed to keep them down there.
Well, and that's the thing. And at what point, you know, are those guys not really progressing? They did the same thing with Matt Boyd. They tried it. It didn't work. So maybe they'll be a little more cautious and not bring a Norris up, give him a full season down in Dunedin. But usually around the All-Star break is when you start to see that. So we'll see how we're rolling at that point and see how they're rolling. But right now, Dunedin's been, you know, they have the inverse record of us. They have, what, 38 wins now. They've only lost 15 times. So they've been a fun team to watch, and we'll see what happens. But usually it is right after that All-Star break in the Florida State League where they start to make some changes, let those guys celebrate a playoff spot, and then give them that promotion that is certainly deserved at this point.
Absolutely, and we hope that the new blood really brings some wins to New Hampshire, and enjoy the game tonight. And we hope that a winning team that gets on a roll will be great to watch for all the fans in Toronto and in Manchester.
Yeah, we haven't had a winner since 2011 for us. That's a long time. So it'd be fun to, again, you don't even think about playoffs, but winning some games would be nice. And, you know, we've won three of the last six, which for us has been a pretty good stretch right now.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Tom. It's Tom Goth here, the play-by-play announcer for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Thanks a lot, Tom, and have a great game tonight.
Thank you.
And that's it for episode number 28 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Tom Goth here for joining me. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week and go Jays go.